You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week I will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. I will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information who are working to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. And I'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as I bring you Answers for the Family. Now, first, I want to thank Dr. Melody for taking time out of her busy schedule and doing such a great job filling in. Dr. Melody, thank you so much. I had a chance to listen to the shows afterwards. Once again, you were phenomenal. So thank you so much. Now, our topic today is exceeding your expectations, from physical rehabilitation to achieving your fitness goals. Let me ask you, have you ever had physical pain in your life? I think at some stage, all of us have. And you know that it affects every part of your life. It affects us as a parent. It affects us as an employee, as a friend, or as a spouse. And unfortunately, I feel that the answer to physical pain by much of the medical community is medication or operation. But fortunately, in many cases, physical therapy provides the much-needed help the body needs to heal and strengthen itself, which also helps prevent further injuries to your body or to that area. Now, to discuss this and more, our guest today, Alan Vogel, is the owner and director of California Rehabilitation and Sports Therapy in Huntington Beach, California. He has a graduate degree from Columbia University and is nationally recognized for his advanced specialty in orthopedics. Now, throughout his career, Alan has been a guest lecturer at local universities and is a sports therapy consultant to the St. Louis Cardinals baseball team and the Huntington Beach Union High School District. Alan, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Well, thank you, Alan. It's very nice to be here today.
Well, it is great to have you here. And one of the things that I think I want to share with our guests and our listeners before we get going is when I'm talking about this, I feel like I'm speaking from a little bit of experience, but that's experience as a patient. I think everybody knows that listens to this show that I love to hear success stories. I always ask the guests, well, you know what, this is great, but you know, we always want to get success stories because I want to come from such a positive place with this show. Well, Alan, I will be asking you for one at some point in time, but in this case, folks, I want to tell you, I am one of the success stories. So I'll share a little bit from the standpoint that I originally met Alan 28 years ago or thereabouts. Maybe I'm not supposed to say that because that kind of gives away how old we are. But and I was in a situation to where I had fallen off of a roof. I was told by a orthopedic surgeon that I would need to have an operation and that if I didn't get the operation, I probably would not be able to walk by the time I'm 30. Well, again, many of you know how old I am. I'm way past that. So fortunately, I didn't take that advice. I didn't get the operation. I chose to try physical therapy, and that's where I first met Alan. The therapy did everything and more. And what I learned, because I had a friend who had a similar operation as to what I was being told to get for my low back, and She ended up having a total of 5 operations after that, because what apparently had happened is that once they went and fused those 2 vertebrae together, the next thing that happened was the one above it got worse, and then the one above that got worse, and so on and so on. So if it sounds like I'm a big promoter of physical therapy, I am. So Alan, first, thank you for that. I think it's allowed me to stay very active in my life, and I think you taught me really, you know, that if you stay, if there's certain things that you do in physical therapy, and you continue to do those things, and I'm one of those that have continued to do the same exercises that I was told 28 years ago, you can stay, you know, young, vibrant, healthy, and fit, you know, for a very, very long time. So thank you for that.
You bet.
Well, and I think also to share with everybody, tell us a little bit about, you know, the history of rehabilitation and physical therapy, and then and how it works. So it's, how did somebody decide that we can do this type of thing in lieu of having to either operate on somebody or just medicate somebody?
Well, physical therapy goes back to the early 20s, the turn of the century, and started off a kind of an adjunct to nursing. And then after World War II, with the veterans and the polio epidemic that ensued in the 40s, physical therapists were employed to help manage certain conditions, and they were trying to optimize these individuals' performance or activities of daily life given the materials that they had. And so they were really looking for, okay, this is what we have. What can we do to help what we have and then optimize the other parts of the body or the mind on trying to get the patient to a full lifestyle?
Now, I mean, I've read and heard a lot of stories of kind of, you know, relatively barbaric, you know, ways of the past as far as dealing with with various types of injuries. You know, at what point did they say, you know what, maybe we don't have to, you know, to do something so extreme and just really sort of help the body help itself? I mean, is that something that came like
evolving? I'm sorry.
Oh no, go ahead.
Physical therapy has been evolving quite a bit, and I think with the research and the data that's allowed us with a professional organization, we've come to realize that, yes, the body has an amazing way of healing. We need to respect pain and not over-pursue that and try to develop ways of facilitating activities and movement to avoid pain and not try to, quote-unquote, work through it all the time.
Well, now what, I mean, how did you become involved in it? I mean, what made you decide that this was the area you were going to work in, and then from that, what area you were going to specialize in?
This happened to me back when I was in high school. I was fortunate enough to be involved with a sports program in my high school back in Ohio. And one of the characters that really I remember the most from my high school was our wrestling coach. He was very motivating. He was very positive. He was in good shape. He just kind of ensued the whole good lifestyle that one wants to pursue. I tried my hand at wrestling, didn't really like it very much, but his character wore off on me, and he's quite a charismatic guy. And actually, I asked him to volunteer in one of his clinics. And as I volunteered and kind of understood what was going on, I came to love it even more and more. And I've been a physical therapist since 1978, and I still look forward to going to work every day. I love the patients. I love what I do. And so it's really a nice feeling to help people.
Well, and you certainly do that. Now, one of the things that I know that I either remember you saying or I remember reading or something is that, you know, you talk about, you know, the 3 typical phases of treatment, that it's important to kind of look at all 3 phases of it, which I think gets, you know, that gets some people like myself that want to jump right to phase three. You know, I want to jump right to the fact of, okay, I want to fix now. And I think you've done a really good job of sort of slowing things down and saying, you know what, you need to go through these three phases if you want it to work right. So share with our audience a little bit about what these three phases are and why it's so important, you know, to pay attention to all three.
Well, the three phases, as how I see it, is when you have an injury or dysfunction, there has to be a healing phase where the tissue, be it bone, ligament, tendon, soft tissue, bursa, it has to have a chance to heal. And depending on the tissue, one should know the physiological healing process. A bone heals at a different rate than a ligament. A ligament heals at a different rate than a tendon, and different parts of the tendon or ligament may heal at a different rate. So one has to know anatomically, physiologically, what they're working with and to give it that time to heal. Second phase would be more of an active phase where you've addressed the healing process and now you're going to ask the body to do certain active things against gravity, normal daily functional activities, trying to respect pain, and develop normal movement patterns. And that's really the important thing during this active phase, that you're not asking the person or the body part to do too much, so they develop compensations or various movement patterns that won't be efficient or healthy. And third phase would be more of a resistive, more of a resistive phase where, okay, now you've gone through the active phase, you're moving well, you have no pain or swelling, and now we can start building strength for endurance, power, and different things you may have to do during your day.
That sounds good.
And we're always working at that resistive phase, mm-hmm. You know, every day against gravity. So,
all right. You know, we have an instant message that's coming across. And again, I thank everybody that takes the time to either send in emails, instant message, or call in. This one reads, I have several friends who are ex-college and NFL players, now in their 40s and 50s. Their bodies are a total wreck. My son has a football scholarship to USC, and for those people around the world, they're referring to the University of Southern California, I believe. And I am very concerned about this sport and his health. I wanted to ask you if you feel that young people should be involved in physical therapy as a preventative measure as well as a fix after injuries occur.
Well, the answer to that is absolutely yes. There's a term called prehabilitation that we use in my industry where you're strengthening predictable areas of overuse, of abuse, and the goal is to make certain areas of the body as strong and as flexible as possible so you can do some so you will be doing preventative activities just for that reason.
Now, is that some of the work that you're doing with the school district to where you're taking the kids in particular sports and you're setting them up on a preventative or, you know, way to exercise and to work on those body parts that keeps them from breaking down as they grow further along in that sport?
Yes, there's many predictable models in my industry for injury patterns. Whether it's an overuse of an upper extremity of an overhead athlete, a baseball pitcher, water polo, or lower extremity, knees, ankles, hips. And there are a number of very successful programs that have been very well researched out that have been very successful in preventing injuries.
Okay. And I know one of the things that you had mentioned before was just in looking at the way in which we move, and I've seen you discuss it with other people as well as with me. So how does the way that you move limit your athletic performance, you know, or make you more prone to injury?
Geez, Alan, I'm going to get very technical here now.
That's okay.
Well, just let's say, for example, a lower extremity. If someone's landing or jumping and their knee collapses inward, mm-hmm. that puts them in a position of vulnerability to tear their medial collateral ligament, their anterior cruciate ligament, or possibly tear their meniscus. And so when you're performing prehabilitation or preventative injuries, you're treating the individual or the athlete, telling them the appropriate way to land, the appropriate way to push off, so they do not develop or overuse these inappropriate movement patterns. Oftentimes we'll put someone in front of a mirror because they may think they're moving correctly, but once their eyes see what they're trying to do, what they've been doing, they say, oh, that's what you mean. And we use videotape a lot now on our different electronic tablets on giving some instant feedback to the individual on how they are moving. We correct that movement and then videotape them again, and they can see it instantaneously how that changes.
That's great. Is that part of what would be considered like the functional movement screen or something like that?
That's a little beyond the functional movement screen, but the functional movement screen is a very good tool for looking at fundamental flexibility and strength patterns throughout the upper and lower extremity and the core to see if they have any statistical weaknesses in that regard.
Okay. Now, are there some levels of training that is just more sport-specific? And in other words, what is sport-specific training versus someone like me that's coming in going, oops, I messed up my neck, or somebody that's maybe been in a car accident or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, the sport-specific activities would break down. Typically, you break down the athletic activity into some fundamental components, whether it be the upper extremity, core, or lower extremity, and you work on those individual components, whether it's the flexibility, strength, power, endurance, and then you try to bring all those parts together into the athletic activity. But you have to break each individual part down to see if there's any part of the chain or any part of the system that's weak or inflexible.
Gotcha.
If one part of the body or one part of the chain is affected, it can affect the entire chain. So if your ankle is not flexible and you're a sprinter or coming down from a layup, if your ankle has lost flexibility, you're at high risk to roll your ankle, which could possibly hurt your knee, or the ankle does not absorb the shock and it may go into your knee.
Right. So it sounds like what you're doing is that you're not only helping them to decrease the possibility of injury, but at the same time, by correcting some of these things, these athletes are going to be able to run faster or react quicker or jump higher or whatever it is that is a fit for their particular sport.
Exactly. And we see this all the time in the clinic, especially with some of our middle school kids and high school kids, where we'll start them on a program and at the beginning of the program, you can see how their feet just start moving correctly or how they're not absorbing shock well. And then after several weeks of it, it's so nice to see the changes in what these kids can do.
Now, you mentioned the absorbing shock. And I know one of the things for those of us that have dealt with low back pain, tell us a little bit about how just learning how to absorb the shock. I mean, I think the average person would think, well, yeah, that would help my knees. But explain how it really helps, all the way up the body.
Well, we've got certain structures that hold us up and move us. And some of the structures are more static structures. That would be your bones, your ligaments, your joint capsules, things that kind of cement us together. And then we have dynamic structures. More muscle and soft tissue oriented. And the goal typically is to achieve as much as you can from the dynamic structures for absorbing shock, the muscles and the soft tissue, so these forces are not transferred into more of the structural tissues, whether it's the joint capsule, the joint disc, and the different bony structures. So the more flexible you are, the more you can absorb shock through movement, and the stronger you are, the more you can attenuate shock through force.
Hmm. So, how about the surfaces that we are on? So take someone like myself who's on the north side of 50. What's going to be the difference between running on cement versus running on grass versus running on gravel?
Well, I don't know exactly the percussion or the density readouts with those three surfaces, but it's highly it's been studied quite well that running on concrete has a significant effect on a joint pressure. Even changing from concrete to asphalt gives your body a little bit of a break. But ideally, you'd like to run on some varied surfaces and on packed dirt or something relatively predictable. Grass and gravel sometimes loses their predictability, and you might step in a hole or a rock or something and twist something. But running on packed dirt is typically a very good surface.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about, now one of the things that I wanted to make sure and do, because for those that haven't followed it, that, you know, with the changes in the laws and with the new medical plans going on and things like that, tell us a little bit about AB 1000 and how it's going to affect the consumers and their ability to utilize physical therapy.
As of January 1st, the California legislature has passed a bill, AB 1000, which allows physical therapists to see patients without a doctor's prescription.
Uh-huh.
And so that means you as a consumer can visit your local physical therapist for up to 12 visits or 45 days, whichever comes first, without the diagnosis or prescription from a physician. Now, this allows for increased consumer contact, quicker healing, hopefully less time in pain and dysfunction. Due to the intervention of the physical therapist, whether it's through application of different modalities, stretching, or simply educating the patient on what's best for them.
Which seems to me that in the long run, I mean, if you're really trying to reduce medical costs, I mean, this just makes so much sense from the standpoint of saying, you know, let's do these preventative things. Or let's try and see what we can do to help the body heal itself, rather than having to go to your general practitioner, who then says, well, I think this is out of my specialty, so he sends you to an orthopedist, and the orthopedist looks at it and says, well, I can either send you to physical therapy, I can give you medication, or if it hurts too much, I can cut it out. You know, it just seems like it makes so much sense to be able to say, look, let's go see if you can have somebody who knows how to help your body heal itself. And so I'm very glad that that's going on. What I want to do is I want to take a bit break. I would love to talk a little bit more about this, as well as, you know, some of your own specialties, some success stories. So everybody, please stay with us. We will be back in about 1 minute. Thank you.
Thank you.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with, in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our topic today is Exceed Your Expectations. We're talking about physical rehabilitation and achieving your fitness goals, to realize that by getting some physical therapy help, there are things that you can do that will help prevent you from getting injured again later on. So again, our guest is Alan Vogel. Now, Alan, let's talk a little bit about your particular specialties, about California rehabilitation, and sports therapy and some of the things that you are doing to help people?
Well, I started California Rehabilitation and Sports Therapy back in 1987, Alan. Long time ago. Several worlds ago. And since that time, we've evolved into a multi-specialty organization. We treat various specialties, hands, feet, low back, and definitely sports injuries. I had my education from Columbia University and then did a sports medicine fellowship, worked in Hawaii as a sports medicine expert with the university, and then moved back to California and worked with the Curlin Job Group. Back then they were in Inglewood, and worked with the Lakers and the Dodgers.
Yep.
And then at that time went out on my own.
So, I mean, let's talk a little bit about some of the types of injuries. Again, for those for those people out there that are you're sitting in your car and you're going, God, my back is killing me, and I went and talked to my my general practitioner who sent me to my orthopedist who put me on muscle relaxers and painkillers. Talk about some of the things that can be done rather than, in this case, taking painkillers and then and maybe just letting the area atrophy rather than being able to strengthen it and help it heal on its own.
Thank you. And that's what they're finding is that movement actually heals the body quicker than at a certain time than rest. That when you have pain and dysfunction, oftentimes not doing anything will lead to more pain and dysfunction or various compensations. And by strengthening it and being appropriately active, you can reverse the actual source of the pain or the reason for the pain. It's been documented quite well that when you have a history of low back pain, your back muscles actually change in their morphology. Meaning you get if you have a history of low back pain, your muscles can be seen on an MRI of changing and increasing their fatty deposition, which kind of goes from a lean, mean steak to kind of a fatty, marbled steak. And that's strictly from being immobilized and having pain. Well, through an active process, through appropriate movement patterns, you can reverse that and allow your back to become strong and support your system appropriately.
Now, one of the things that I remember you saying, that really sunk in, and it didn't make sense at the moment in which you told me, but many years later now it's made great sense. And that was when you said, one of the best things that you can do to strengthen your back is strengthen your stomach muscles. So share with us how that works.
Well, your stomach muscles act as a corset, and believe it or not, your stomach muscles really don't have a significant bony attachment. Obviously, they're in the front there by your belly button, but they attach into the soft tissue on the backside of your rib cage and overlying your spine. So what they do when you have appropriate abdominal muscle control, they act as a corset. They act as a preventer of motion for your lumbar spine. And so as your abdominals become stronger and they function appropriately, they act to help support your core and prevent motion, unwanted motion at your spine. And why do you want that? Well, if you look at the mechanics of the spine is really not made to move an excessive amount. It's actually made to move quite little, and the joints below it, the hip joints, that are very big ball and socket joints with big muscles around them, are really made to move. So the more we can prevent excessive motion in our spine and use our hips as much as possible, the less chance we have of injury.
Well, that makes sense to me, and as I said, and it has certainly worked in my case. We have an email that has come across, and this one kind of touches right into this area. This one says, I believe not all rehabs are the same. I had months of treatment after my car accident 2 years ago. In addition to the basic rehab, I had chiropractic and acupuncture as well. Unfortunately, my back and neck pain has come back and is increasing. Can you explain how your protocols may differ from mainstream, and are you having consistent responses to working with people with injuries such as mine?
Well, without having seen this individual, it's hard to say, but we're categorized in our clinics as what you would call manual therapists. After looking at the data, looking at the different tests, listening to what the patient tells you, and then examining them, we're a very hands-on physical therapy clinic. We want to be able to evaluate each vertebrae, each muscle, how each system, how each individual part adds up to a complete system. And so we're a very hands-on, on the patient type of clinic. We don't use a lot of electrical modalities as some clinics might, and so I want to say that's our standard protocol. We take pride in really understanding how each part of the body is working for that particular patient.
Well, and if I could add something in here, and correct me if I'm wrong, Alan, but I'm reading this email, and it says, you know, unfortunately my back and neck pain has come back. So it says, as I understand it, the car accident was 2 years ago. They've gone through rehab and chiropractic and acupuncture. And it says, unfortunately, my neck and back pain has come back and is increasing. One of the things that I feel has been so beneficial that you've done in each thing, and I think that goes right to what you were saying before, and that was the final phase. You know, if somebody just does the phase one and they just do phase two, but I think phase three, that's a lot on us. I mean, I feel as the patient, you know, that's on us. Phase three is you now need to maintain this level of exercise or flexibility or whatever it is that we need to do so that it doesn't come back, so that we don't allow it to atrophy to a point in which we've allowed things to go back into place. Would you agree with that?
Yes, and it is an act of participation by the individual. They have to make a commitment to themselves and participate in the process, especially after they've been injured. You know, you've been injured and you've had pain for a substantial amount of time. It takes a long time for the body to completely rehabilitate itself. You may feel better, your tests may look better, you might be performing better, but it's a long, long process. You know, oftentimes people say it's 2 to 3 to 1, meaning for every day you've been injured, it takes 2 to 3 days to compensate for that and to come back. So it's a long participation process. And as the demographics change and you get a little older, we've got many things fighting against us. We've got wear and tear. We've got hormonal changes. We've got gravity over the years. And just that alone, we have to work harder every day just to maintain a certain level. I heard a great saying a few months ago. It says, exercise as if your life depends on it. And a quality of life, a way to live out your life in a quality way, exercise does add a significant amount. And your life does depend on it. The quality of life does depend on it.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Share with us, again, other than me, because actually, and for those that know, I mean, I shared the back one, but, you know, it's, you know, going back to when I was younger and was playing a lot of sports, if I remember correctly, you dealt with the back, and then I went back and started playing crazy sports again, and then I think you had to deal with it was either the knee or the ankle when I did that one, and then one of the ones was the broken arm, and that was my diving incident. And not only
fill the pool up first, Alan.
You know, nobody told me that going in. You know, but on that one of the things that I thought was really interesting was the fact that during the time of having it in a type of cast, obviously everything atrophied. But one of the things that I liked was that when we got to the end of the therapy or whatever, and I remember you brought an intern over and had me there without a shirt on and said, I want you to look at him. We just did work on on a broken arm, tell me which one we worked on. And he looked at it and he couldn't tell. So what I felt good about that was, because I had this fear when this, you know, my dominant arm got really tiny, and I thought I was going to look like really, you know, out of sync, you know, completely, you know, incongruent with my body. It was going to look really weird. And you were able to have me do exercises in such a way that brought them up to the point that that people could not tell that I had, that I'd had a broken arm. So, you know, that's one of the success stories, but I'd love for you to share one that maybe doesn't involve me.
Oh, I got to dig deep on this one now.
I don't think so.
Well, we have the fortune to be able to work with a lot of high school kids here, and thank God they heal very well. They make you look really good. So you just point them in the right direction, and things usually work out very well. But last year we seemed to have a slew of a lot of contact injuries, and I remember one young man is a double sport athlete at one of the local high schools, and his mom brought him in one day. I didn't know they were coming in. They just kind of came in, and she brought him in over lunch, actually. The place was pretty quiet, and she came in, and he was very upset. He was in a wheelchair. His leg was pretty badly beat up. His shoulder was pretty badly beat up, and he was a junior in high school and was really looking forward to his senior year in participation. So he came in, and he was pretty emotional about the whole situation. His mom had heard about us because of our work at the high schools, so she just wanted to bring him in and show him the place. Well, fortunately for everyone, it was right at the end of lunch, and we had our 2 o'clockers coming in right at the end of lunch, and there happened to be a fellow from a competing high school that had been injured, I think, about 3 or 4 months earlier. Almost the same situation. He had multi-body parts beat up, and he was not doing well at the time. And after 3 or 4 months of rehab, he was back to playing a sport full blast. And he was a multi-sport athlete, and he had actually just gotten a letter of intent, a scholarship to one of the a D1 school. And when this one young man shared his experience with the newly injured individual, you could see a whole different light come over him. He saw there was hope, that someone else had done this, someone else had gone through this, and they were doing very well. There was hope after this kind of debilitating injury. And sure enough, that's what happened to this young kid. He did very well. He's very motivated. And like I say, you point these kids in the right direction, they do very well. And it's such a blessing to have these kids in here, because there's so many good kids out there and so many good young people that are contributing. And you know, to see them walk in the door in the afternoon and hold the door open for another individual, or say good morning to someone or good afternoon, it really brightens up your whole day.
Well, and I think you bring up a great point, because you were just starting to touch on sort of the psychology of it, you know, that being able to have that hope, being able to look at somebody else and know that they got through it, has got to be just so beneficial to in these young people, but anybody. I mean, I think that, you know, at a time in which we get injured, and you know, and if we are laid up for a while, I mean, it's a very, very difficult time in most people's life, and it's very easy for depression to sink in, you know, when these things are happening and when you can't do the things that you knew you were just able to do. So, I mean, talk a little bit more about the psychology of it.
Well, you certainly do want to present false hope to anyone, but hopefully with the physical therapist or any of the medical practitioners can use their experience in a positive way, set out a plan, give the individual, the patient, objectives, and motivate them through their accomplishments, whether it's increased range of motion, they're able to raise their hand above their head, they're able to hold a pencil, they're able to lift a little weight or start some squatting activities. You build on these little accomplishments and give the patient hope and point those out to the patient. Look at 2 months ago or 2 weeks ago, you couldn't raise your arm up, and look at you today. And so pointing out these little things that happen along the rehabilitation road are very motivating. And again, as the medical practitioner, with use your experience and saying, yes, you can get through this. You will get better. If you do this, this, and this, and this, my experience tells me that you're going to do just fine.
Which is great.
As the practitioner, you know, has to put themselves out a little bit there. They have to be invested in the patient, invested in the process. And that's the beauty of this job. You don't just come to work and punch a card. That you're here, you've invested in the individual, they're investing in themselves. And again, their power of healing is very powerful. It's amazing to see it work.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And you do have some people that are invested and that really, seem truly pleased, that you're going the extra mile, that you're doing the things that you need to do, to get your body back in the way that you want it to be. Now, I know when we were talking a little bit earlier, and I want to touch on this before we run out of time, when we were talking about the AB1000, and you had mentioned about the fact that, it gives 12, you can come for 12 visits. But one of the thoughts that I had when we were talking about that is, what happens if you see the patient 12 times and they still need further treatment?
Well, at that course, you would have to refer them to a medical practitioner. They would be evaluated and further diagnosed, and they could return to physical therapy based on what the physician has said.
Okay.
And their insurance, however their insurance policy is written.
Okay, now the physician that you refer them to, are you able to refer them to a physician that you work with that's very supportive of physical therapy, or do you have to just tell them to go back to the insurance policy or go back to whoever's on that panel and wait?
Well, there are many good physicians out there. Unfortunately, after being in business for 20 some odd years, we've come to network with some wonderful individuals. So we would like to try to refer them to someone who fits this person's diagnosis or impairment, fits this person's personality, to keep the ball rolling, if you will, as best as possible.
Good. Within this law, I mean, are there specific injuries that do fall under it and specific ones that don't? And if so, which ones do?
Well, physical therapists are now being educated at a clinical doctorate level. And so a physical therapist graduating from school now is a doctor of physical therapy, like a doctor of podiatric or optometry. So it's a clinical doctorate.
I didn't know that.
However, we're evaluating the patients, and there are certain medical conditions or impairments that we have an expertise in. Gait abnormality, pain in the low back, extremities, pain in the hip, wrist, ankle, basically a lot of your orthopedic conditions. Scoliosis, fall risks, balance asymmetries, headaches, multiple diagnoses in that regard.
Okay. Now, this new law, I mean, did they have any sort of model for this? Was there any model? Was there another environment that it had already worked in and they said, okay, we know this can work because it's working here, be it in another state, another country? What are they basing this on?
Probably the primary model would be the military. In the military environment, an individual can go to a physical therapist without a physician's input. And so the military has been utilizing physical therapists independently for quite some time now. There's also been a number of studies evaluating the medical physical therapy model versus just the physical therapy model. And those studies have pointed that there's been a significant reduction in costs to the payer and to the individual, as far as copay, transportation, loss of work, and those type of things. But I would say the military model is probably the benchmark from which we've used.
Well, I mean, it certainly sounds like a win-win situation if they've got a model that says that not only is it working and being more effective, but it's more cost-effective.
Yeah.
You know,
those are hard to find nowadays.
Exactly. I was going to say, I mean, how do you find a model like that and not jump on it immediately? So I'm glad that they have. I think that's incredible. Alan, I just want to tell you, I want to thank you so much, and not just for what you do for me, but what you do for kids. you know, again, if anybody out there, let me tell you, as far as anybody that's out there, if you're listening and you want to get a hold of Alan, you can go to it's calrehab.com, which is calrehab.com. Again, they're located in Huntington Beach, but I'm sure that if somebody needs to get a hold of you and maybe they're not local, you know, is there something on there that they can put questions or something, and you might be able to refer them to somebody if they're in another area?
Absolutely. If they'd like to email me at avogel@calrehab.com.
All right.
And that's just, refer to this program as far as the subject. Or I'd be happy to take a phone call at 714-847-3800.
That is very nice of you. I appreciate that very much. So again, for anybody out there, and if you happen to be driving and you can't write any of this stuff down, go ahead and go to our website. It's answers4thefamily.com. Go to the website. We have all of the information on the site. You can listen to this show, or you can get the information that you need to reach Alan. So, Alan, again, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate what you're doing for all of us. And let's hope that that we can all start feeling much better about our bodies and our lives.
Alan, thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Now, for everybody still listening, please stay with us for just another minute. I'm going to play a recording. This is from Darnell talking about her mother, Donya, a truly wonderful human being. And she is going through something right now in which she really needs all of our help. So please listen, have a wonderful week, and be with us next week at the same time. Thank you.
My name is Darnell Young, and I'm desperately reaching out for help. In 1970, after a blood transfusion, my mom contracted hepatitis C, which later evolved into terminal liver cancer. A transplant is her only chance of survival, and we don't have the means to fund the surgery. My stepdad's working as much as he can, and I just got off chemotherapy myself, so I've been limited in what I can do. Any amount you could give would help our family more than you can possibly know. You can go to our fundraising website at youcaring.com. That's youcaring.com, and search One Family's Battle, onefamily_sbattle, and you can donate directly there. Don't forget to capitalize the first letter of all those words. Thank you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.